welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Steve Roddy. Steve is the Chief Marketing Officer of Quadrix, a leading processor technology intellectual property licensor. Good morning, Steve.
Dan, good morning. Good to talk to you.
So, Steve, we know each other. We've known each other for quite a few years. But tell me, how did you first get into semiconductors?
How did I first get into semiconductors? Well, I had a double ECS degree coming out of Berkeley way back in the dark days of the 1980s. I guess I got into engineering and computers, programming a computer back in high school, the first programming class. I thought that was pretty cool. And then when I was applying to college, I remember one day my dad comes home with a magazine listing the starting salaries of recent graduates by major, by discipline. Number one was nuclear engineering, which sounded interesting, except Three Mile Island had just like melted down like a couple of months before. And number two was electrical engineering. And I figured, oh, electrical engineering, computer science, that's me. I should go do that. Not only is it interesting, but it pays well. And it turns out I actually kind of fell in love with the whole idea of computer architecture and specialized that in undergrad, sort of processor architecture stuff. And wound up working for a couple of computer companies in the late 80s when I got out of Berkeley. And then the rest is history.
Yeah, that's almost my exact same story. I got involved with the Commodore PET. I saw one and just, you know, fell in love with computing. And then I read a book called Soul of a New Machine. I don't know if you remember that book, but it was about the Data General, development of the Data General 32-bit computer. And I went to work for Data General. So my first 10 years in this industry were with computer companies.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, the Commodore PET. I recall that as well. That's what I think our high school had. It had the cassette tape as the storage mechanism to store your program if you programmed it in.
Yeah. So I knew you at Tensilica. Excellent exit at Tensilica. Cadence. Cadence bought Tensilica. You stayed at Cadence for some time. So what brings you to Quadrix?
Well, I went from, like I said, Tensilica for many years, 17 years in total, both as an independent company and as part of Cadence. And I switched over to ARM for 4 years. Left there earlier this year and was looking for, you know, the next new thing. And I really like the startup environment. Right? I've worked in big companies, I've worked in small companies. Working for a startup is, you know, much more challenging, much more interesting, much more fast-paced. And Quadrix was, you know, caught my eye when I was looking for new opportunities, because it really combines a lot of the disciplines and areas where I have background. It is an architecture that is uniquely a combination of machine learning, inference processor, and a DSP wrapped into one. And it's semiconductor IP, and I've been in the IP business for 25 years, so it was sort of tailor-made for me to drop into, and it's, you know, it's an exciting opportunity, good people, you know, local to the Bay Area. I couldn't resist.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect fit. So tell me about GPNPU. That's a term you guys use to describe your processor. What does that mean?
So we're coining the term GPNPU. I think a lot of people in the business understand what an NPU is, a neural processing unit, or something that is aimed at doing machine learning, inference, neural processing in devices. There are a number of NPU architectures out there, and a lot of them are really internal things, sort of accelerators, NPUs that individual semiconductor companies have come up with. Our spin on it is different. Our spin is very similar to how a company like NVIDIA coined the term the GPU, right? Where before NVIDIA came up with that idea, a GPU was really just a polygon drawer. It was just for graphics. NVIDIA introduced the idea of being able to do general purpose code, CUDA code, C code, so you can do high performance computing, you can do Bitcoin mining and other general purpose compute on top of a GPU. It made it much more broad and much more widely used. And the analogy is very apt with what Quadric has. It is an architecture optimized for NPU inference, but it can also run C++ DSP code. So it's unique in the market in that it does both at the same time.
So let's talk about the coding. What coding style is this? Is this CPU type coding style, or is this more like, as you mentioned, CUDA for NVIDIA GPUs?
It's going to be very similar to what CUDA looks like. So it'll be a stylized C++ API to run your C algorithms, and then traditional graph-based programming for the machine learning code. So you'll take in an ONNX or TensorFlow graph and mix it with your C++ code, compiled all together with an LLVM compiler, and the resulting executable runs and executes on the GPNPU processor.
Ah, okay, got it. So what does the ability to run C++ code do for you as an SoC guy or a software programmer? You know, what's wrong with how we do it today? What's wrong with the conventional approach of laying down CPUs for C code or DSPs or DSP code or NPUs, et cetera?
Good question. If you look at most architectures where you see NPUs for accelerating or running machine learning algorithms, you note that in almost every single case, it's sitting next to some form of DSP, which is doing some of the pre or post processing of the signals that are being manipulated. By signals, I mean it's a camera doing image processing or video stream processing, or it is a radar or a LiDAR, or even an audio processing. It might be, you know, several microphones doing far field beam forming type things. And historically, those kind of data plane processing tasks were purely C code running on DSPs. And over the last few years, you've seen this infiltration of machine learning algorithms to enhance or improve the image processing or improve the voice recognition or language processing. So really, the system is an intermingled combination of some machine learning graph processing, some C code programming, and they're rapidly evolving algorithms. So for the system developer, it's difficult if you're writing this solution. How do you know how to partition your code? What should run on the machine learning accelerator? What should run on the control CPU? What should run on the DSP? The complexity of programming two or three different cores is quite the challenge. What we offer with Quadric is a single processor that can do all of that integrated in one easy to program, easy to debug solution. And if you asked any software developer, would you rather, you know, partition your code amongst three cores or have it all run on one and debug it with one debugger, I think the answers would be universally they'd prefer a single core.
And are you guys just doing IP licensing, or it seems to me I remember you guys talked about doing some silicon edge devices, or, you know, I don't recall exactly. So what is the strategy for the company today?
Good question. When the company got started, it was, you know, a technical team trying to prove out an architecture. We actually have working silicon at speed, a first generation architecture built last year, and has been well accepted by a number of early access customers. But as part of raising the B round of funding earlier this year and trying to figure out how to go broad and go wide with the technology, it became pretty clear to the investors, to the management team, that, you know, a machine learning licensing model, as opposed to trying to build individual silicon for market specific solutions, was a better way to really leverage the technology, right? To establish a new architecture, you want it to be as broadly applicable and widely used as possible. So the likelihood of emerging as a winning architecture increases when you have, you know, maybe several dozen licensees as opposed to one silicon company trying to pitch an architecture into one single marketplace. So increasing the odds of success meant going with the IP licensing model.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, that's very big in the industry, right? So you've spent many years in the IP business with Tensilica and ARM and Cadence, as we mentioned. So you know the landscape. So what is the landscape for this product? Who will Quadric compete with in the market? And, you know, how are you going to differentiate yourself?
Well, it's a wide open market right now, which I think is one of the things that attracted me to the company. As you said, I've been in the IP space for many years, the processor IP space for many years. The last few years at Tensilica, we had introduced things that were machine learning optimized. 4 years at ARM, I was doing NPU processors. But even with companies like ARM, Cadence, Tensilica, VeriSilicon, Siva, and others having offerings, none of them are really dominant. None of them are really, sweeping the field. If you actually were to, take a sampling of 20 or 30 devices in the marketplace that have some form of NPU accelerator, you'd find that the vast majority are using some sort of internally developed NPU or accelerator. It's a very wide open field where nearly every application needs some form of machine learning acceleration, but there's no dominant architecture. And I think what Quadric offers unique is this ability to mix both the graph processing and the DSP processing into a single architecture. I don't know that anyone else offers anything like that. Certainly none of the commercial solutions do. So if some company is going to emerge as a leader in the market space, there has to be some reason why a licensed architecture is better than the in-house accelerator. And I think the reason a lot of the IP licensors are struggling is they're offering, something that does 20 or 30 operator types, and that's kind of like what the semiconductor companies have built internally. There's not a whole lot of differentiation between the internal one and the external one, and that's why a lot of companies have resisted licensing in solutions. I think we have a chance to be that differentiator. Eventually, the market's going to become one of a licensed marketplace, because it doesn't make sense for 50 companies to develop 50 NPUs and software support for all 50 things, much like the CPUs and the DSPs and the GPUs beforehand. I think the market will become one of licensed IP for machine learning, and I kind of like our chances because we have that unique differentiator.
Yeah, I agree. There are specific markets out there for these type of IP. What do you have in mind? I mean, are you on the edge? Are you in the data center, automotive, et cetera? I mean, what are you targeting and what type of customer engagements do you have in what markets?
So we're definitely targeting the edge. As an IP play, it's all, volume related. As a processor IP, it's a licensing fee, but it's a royalty. So the volume markets are the ones that are the interesting ones. So not a data center type thing for where we're aiming. That said, it's going to be pretty broad. We'll have automotive grade versions of the product, functionally safe implementations, as well as conventional. So anything that is a high volume socket, tablets, laptops, phones, security cameras. But there are a large number of automotive sockets as well. I mean, anything that has a camera these days needs some form of machine learning to intelligently process that image or that video. And whether it's unlocking your front door or whether it's determining whether the driver of the car is a little bit sleepy or you name it, there is some form of machine learning inference happening locally in a device. Because with the billions of cameras that are shipping, obviously companies can't stream all of that video or all those images up to the cloud and analyze in the cloud. There's just not enough bandwidth in the world. So it is, given that all these devices are going to be doing on-device inference, and the more flexibility that the semiconductor vendor can offer to the OEM as far as what kind of algorithms can run in those devices, the more successful those silicon products will be. And we think with our unique combination of offering graph processing and signal processing, we'll be able to help empower those chip vendors to have the most successful products.
Right. I agree completely. The edge is where the volumes are, and AI and ML is going to touch just about every product. So I think that's a good market space. So what solution do you have available today? You have IP that you're licensing? Do you have test chips, silicon proof? Where are you guys at right now?
So we're in the process of packaging up the IP for external licensing. We have version one of the core in silicon, working silicon at speed, a gigahertz working tool chain. We are engaging with select number of early partners to sort of prove that out and get some early design wins lined up. We will be, as with all solutions, you build the first one, you realize, oh, there's a whole bunch of things you'd want to tweak. So this summer, we're going to be fine-tuning the offering and coming out in the fall with a formal offering of the product, a product announcement. That's sort of a stay tuned for news later messaging here. We'll be looping back with you and others and talking about the actual product solution sometime in the fall, September, October timeframe. But we're excited about being able to get ready to launch that and grow the company, and it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
So IPO in 2024, 2025, what are you thinking?
We hope. Well, I mean, it does take the thing about IP is it takes a little bit of patience. It takes time for the architecture to take root. You know, you need 20 or more licenses, and it takes time for your licensee to take the IP, design it into their own silicon, and take that shipping into market. So it might be 2, 3, 4 years before we're at critical mass to where the market is open for some sort of transaction. On the other hand, you know, markets are looking rather turbulent now, so it's probably a good time to be investment mode. You know, we just closed our B round funding. We don't need to do anything in the near term beyond execute, roll out product, grow the sales team, you know, engage with customers, hopefully delight them all. So the next couple of years are going to be nose to the grindstone, working away, and whatever comes our way, comes our way.
Well, that's good to hear, Steve, and I'm glad you're back in action in the IP business. It's an exciting time in the semiconductor industry. You know, I just am amazed every year. I say that, but every year it's absolutely true. Do you have some final thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. It is an exciting time. Machine learning in general has really been both an enabler and a disruptor in our market. You, as you said moments ago, there's hardly a market you can think of that hasn't been impacted by what can be done with machine learning. Everything from massive decision systems in the cloud for your shopping habits to language processing to image and signal recognition. Every volume market, even low volume markets, satellites for crying out loud, anything needs intelligent processing where the data is created, and those are the markets that we're aiming at with our technology. And as the pandemic has accentuated, you see that fabs are maxed out. Everyone's predicting the semiconductor market's going to go from what is it now, $500 billion to nearly $1 trillion over the next decade. It's a great time to be in the market, whether you're an IP vendor, whether you're a silicon player, whether you're in the fab side. It's an exciting growth opportunity, and we're looking forward to it here at Quadrant.
Yeah, with AI specifically, there will never be enough computing power. So anybody in the processor IP business is going to do well, in my opinion. So thanks for your time, Steve. Thanks, everyone, for listening in to the Semiconductor Insider podcast series. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Dan.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.